This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Scientists who study climate change have experienced a marked environmental shift. It's come in the form of canceled federal research grants, a decimation of the federal workforce, and apprehension about discussing climate change and other topics like environmental justice under the second Trump administration. STLPR senior environment and data reporter Kate Grumke's recent reporting for Harvest Public Media takes up those circumstances with a focus on scientists in the middle of the U.S. She joins us now to talk about that work. Kate, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Kate, what led you to report on this story?
So as an environmental reporter here in St. Louis, I spend a lot of time talking to scientists. I'm often checking in with them about their research or asking them questions about things that are happening in our area. And last year, those conversations started to change a lot. So I started to hear from people who used to be regular sources who were no longer authorized to speak with me or who weren't able to talk with me openly about their research. I was also hearing from people who were studying climate change but didn't want to talk to a reporter about that because they had seen other people have their grants targeted and they didn't want to have a similar fate. And so I kind of started to realize there was a bigger pattern going on, and this was something that the public needed to understand. And so that's really where the idea to make this into an article came from.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of scientific and environmental research have particular relevance to the middle of the country? I mean, this is where we're sitting, right?
Yeah. So I talked to a few different people who were doing research about water quality and had their grants canceled. One was about Mississippi River water quality. Another was about Heartland reservoirs. And then I also talked to people who help us understand how the climate is changing in the middle of the country. So that was another big category of people, climate scientists who are looking at the research and helping us understand what's different about kind of the flavor of climate change here in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. For this recent feature that you've done, you talked with Rebecca North, a Mizzou Limnology Lab director, and the work that she is doing, running a series of water quality tests in central Missouri, has been funded by a private homeowners association. Why would a group like that be willing to pay a scientist?
Yeah, so in this case, the lake that she was testing has had some issues with water quality, and it's a lake that people like to spend time in. It's a recreational lake, and so they wanted her to come in and help them understand what can we do to improve the water quality in our lake. And the thing about Rebecca is she studies lakes all over the state, and that used to be funded from the EPA. And in the last year, she's found out that that funding is going to stop. So she used to test 65 lakes around the state as part of that, and she'll do a little bit more of that testing before the money runs out. But in this case, it's a private homeowners association that was paying her, and she said that that was a first in her career.
And she also said it's the first time that she's had to put a donate button on her website.
So she's trying to raise money herself now to do this testing at lakes around Missouri. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I heard from a lot of scientists, that they're looking for other options as they've faced these cuts in the last year. They're looking to private organizations, to foundations, or in this case, to private funding.
Mm-hmm. Now, Harvest Public Media requested comment from the White House, and the spokesman, Kushtesai's response was, quote, "The United States is home to the largest public-private ecosystem of innovation in the world, and the American government is the largest funder of scientific research." So I have a couple of questions that are related to this, Kate. A private HOA group contracted Rebecca North, a scientist, to do that water quality test, and foundation funding was secured by the Water Resources Center at University of Minnesota, which is someone else that you spoke with there. Doesn't that stand as a piece of evidence that scientific work can survive without federal funds?
So everyone that I talked to said that although foundation funding or private funding had come in some small way, it would not come close to covering the gap that had been left by the federal government in the last year. So the foundation funding with Bonnie Keeler in Minnesota, that's actually related to the National Nature Assessment. So this was a Biden-era administration initiative to get an idea of biodiversity in the U.S., much like we used to do the National Climate Assessment, another project that's been put on ice in the last year. And so that National Nature Assessment is going to go forward with foundation funding. But again, Bonnie told me herself that this is not something that the federal government leaving behind is going to be totally be able to be picked up by foundations. They're just hugely different in size.
Is there anyone or anything else that is stepping in to fill the gaps in funding?
One really interesting organization that I spoke with for this story, Climate Central, they have come in to do a few different things that the federal government stopped doing in the last year. So they are now publishing a billion-dollar disaster database. And as a St. Louisan, I was especially interested in that this year because we had a billion-dollar disaster here with the tornado. And so what they found was 2025 had the third most billion-dollar disasters on record. That used to be an announcement that we would hear from the federal government. It was housed at the federal government level, and now it's a private organization that's taken it on. Mm-hmm. And they've also done similarly, they're taking on these monthly climate briefings that NOAA used to do. Now, the federal government, in that case, they're still collecting this data. They're just not sharing it with everyone. They're not talking about it publicly. Mm-hmm. And again, Climate Central, I spoke with their vice president of science, Christina Dahl, and she told me that there's just no way that we are going to be able to fill all of these gaps.
And to put a finer point on this, Kate, is funding the only factor to consider when it comes to federal level support for scientific research, for scientific information?
There are definitely other really big ways that I kept hearing the same thing from the scientists and realized that it was a trend. So one big one is that there are more than 300,000 fewer federal workers from last year. So people were either laid off, they left early, or they retired. And the people that I spoke with for this story, the scientists, told me that that decimating of the federal scientific workforce specifically has left them really unable to coordinate across states with a lot fewer services, a lot fewer communications about science. And then they also told me that that is affecting the careers for people. So there are fewer jobs to be had and there are more people competing for those jobs.
And when you were out on the water with Rebecca North, I think you had an opportunity to talk with somebody who is directly experiencing that, right?
Yeah, that's right. So one of her technicians that was there as someone who graduated from Mizzou in May, and she said she considers herself very lucky to have this job working in Rebecca's lab, and she stayed after graduation. But she said that many people that she graduated with have not had that same luck. They either have taken a gap year, haven't been able to find a job. She said some have looked abroad to work elsewhere as scientists, not in the United States. And Rebecca North told me that she's had 5 students stay on in her lab after graduation this year, which is not typical.
Mm-hmm. And North is somewhat ironic in that she is Canadian, from what I understand.
Yes.
And some of the brain drain is actually now going in that direction. People are being appealed to go up north.
Yeah. So Rebecca told me she came on an H-1B visa and she is Canadian. And she said she doesn't think that in today's climate, she would be given that same opportunity to come here and do science for us in Missouri or in the United States.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Kate Grumke. She is STLPR's Senior Environment and Data Reporter. And her recent reporting takes up some of the cuts that have been experienced by scientists, particularly in the middle of the country since the second Trump administration. I want to get back to the funding question. When scientists you spoke with were talking about loss of federal funding, what is it that they told you about notices they received about those cancellations? What was in those notices and what was missing?
Yeah, so in most cases, they told me that they received emails with letters that said that the work they were doing no longer effectuates the priorities of the administration. And the scientists I spoke with across the board said that they felt that there was really no warning about this. They had no way to meaningfully wind down the work that they were doing. And they also felt that there really wasn't much explanation in those notices about why their specific grant had been cut. There was one grant that I saw that was cut that they did say that it was because they were basically trying to move away from diversity, equity, and inclusion. So that one had some specifics, but many of the letters were really just kind of form letters, similar language, and the scientists said they weren't really sure exactly why that had happened to them.
Mm-hmm. How much of that has affected, you know, this feeling of apprehension among scientists to discuss, you know, specific subjects like climate change or environmental justice?
Yeah, I think it's huge because the scientists really feel like they can't do their work if they're being targeted for specific subjects. And even if the grant has not been directly cut, they're worried about other grants they have. And so that's something, you know, that's really what I started to hear kind of over the summer from people as I was reporting and realized, okay, there's this kind of silencing around these topics that have been deemed controversial.
Mm-hmm. Kate, you spoke with one of the many scientists who left their positions last year. Doug Kluck retired from his more than 30-year career with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, but he mentioned that he was not ready to retire at that time. Why did he leave his role?
Yeah, so Doug was the Regional Climate Services Director for the Central U.S. He was based in Kansas City, and he had been with NOAA for 33 years. And in the spring, he said that DOGE started to happen, the Department of Government Efficiency. And he said the message was essentially, we can fire you for any reason, and if we do that, you will lose your health care benefits. Well, Doug has a special needs son who's 18 but is going to need health care for the rest of his life. And so Doug made the decision to retire early. He was at the magic age of 62, so he was able to do that from the federal government. And he really did that, he said, not willingly, but because he was worried that he would be fired without cause, essentially, and lose those benefits for his son.
Doug also shared, Kate, his thoughts on how the scientific community may be affected in the next couple years, especially during the remaining 3 years of the Trump administration.
I try to remain a little bit hopeful. And if the House changes over, I think there'll be more opportunities for various funding. So I'm relatively optimistic that things will change. I also think that it doesn't matter what party you're in, disasters will affect both sides, and there will be emphasis to do better in terms of the impact of those disasters in the future. So there's some inevitability in this. You can downplay climate change all you want. You can call it something else. It doesn't really matter. Again, climate has its own way of behaving, and we're all going to be affected by it, whether we like it or not. And I'm not saying this is a belief system. This is a pure science and physics issue.
Kate, what stands out to you about what Doug shared?
I think what stands out to me is that Doug's kind of hopefulness that the work will continue is something I heard from pretty much all of the scientists I spoke with. And sometimes this might surprise people. I cover climate change. I think about climate change all the time. And a lot of people have a lot of feelings of doom around climate change. And we know that it will have really serious effects and really affect people's lives. But scientists as a group are working together to try to understand our world better. And in general, they're moving forward. They're making progress. And so all of them kind of see themselves as part of this bigger effort to say, how can we understand life on Earth a little bit more in my lifetime? But they all know that they're only going to see a little bit of that. You know, they're not going to live to the end of our full understanding of this. And so there's this optimism that they're all kind of working toward that. And I think that's something I heard from people is this time will pass. This will be a short amount of time that we're having this attitude toward science. But generally, there's a hope that that will change.
Mm-hmm. What seem to be their biggest questions?
I mean, I think that the questions of what the true extent of this will be is still outstanding. So in the short term right now, I think they know that everything is slowing down a lot. In some cases, they're finding ways to still do this work a little bit, but it's going much slower because they can't have the funding, the people, the resources to do the scientific inquiry that they were pursuing. But long term, it seems like it's still pretty fuzzy for them. They're not sure when we might get back to a fully funded scientific endeavor, or if we will, and what the impacts of that will be in the short term, especially for someone like Rebecca North, who's monitoring lakes, and a gap in data is a really hard thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Kate Grumke is STLPR Senior Environment and Data Reporter. You can find her story titled "Scientists Say Trump's Second Term Has Been Defined by Slashed Funding, Layoffs, and Uncertainty." And that story, again, is for Harvest Public Media. You can find that at stlpr.org. Kate, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll meet the producers behind a new STLPR project about making connections, bridging divides, and finding a way forward. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
And by Elaine Cha. Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.